Hey, BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hey, I'm back. I'm black and I'm brown. Hey, Mandra.
Oh, I missed you so much.
Oh, my God. It feels so weird being back in my bed, talking on my computer.
Where have you been, budgetista?
You know, it's crazy because honestly, I didn't, like, usually for vacation, you go somewhere and I didn't go anywhere and it was exactly the vacation I needed.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, I took a social media break too, which was honestly everything because I didn't realize how stressful Instagram, especially Facebook, yes, but Instagram is honestly kind of stressful.
Oh, I 100% think I agree with you. I take my own like little breaks after work.
Yeah. So it was just nice to just take a full break. Like I went for walks. I was like, I had like a list of like things I wanted to do. I was like, I want to get my nails done. I want to wash my hair. I want to get my hair retightened. Like I had like these little, I want to get a massage. And so I want to take a walk in the park. And because right now in Newark, it's cherry blossom season. Newark has the largest amount of cherry blossom trees in the United States in one concentrated area. So it's when I say beautiful, Mandy, it looks like a wonderland. And so, it was exactly what I needed. No emails, no, you know, work conversations. I mean, Superman and I went on several dates. It was just really nice.
Oh, I'm so glad you had some time to recharge and reboot yourself. It seems like the perfect time too, right before spring really gets underway.
Yeah, so what were you guys up to when I was gonesies?
Oh, you know, we cheated on you a little bit. We had Lynette Calfani Cox on the show. Last week we had Marcus Garrett from Paychecks and Balances. So thank you to them for coming through and filling in your massive shoes. They did their best.
Oh, well, I mean, I already know. I mean, no shade to Marcus, but Lynette, I know she's a beast. That's my mentor. So I'm like, what, Lynette? Yes.
Love it. And best wishes to Sandy again, Sandy Smith of Yes, I Am Cheap. I'm definitely going to try and get her on the show again because I've been trying to make this happen forever, but fate just keeps getting in our way. I hope Sandy is recovering well at the hospital and her health is obviously top priority.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Let's get back in the groove. What's happening? I read a story today that millennials lie on their resumes, and I just have to say, you guys, don't do it. Mm-hmm. I've literally gotten to a point where I have like hired a candidate, like given them an offer letter, they've signed. And then, you know, what happens after that point is a background check happens. Like that's what companies do at this stage. Once you've signed the offer letter, then there's like the asterisk of, pending the background check. And they will check your damn resume and your LinkedIn profile versus records. And, you know, we had to rescind an offer to some candidate who lied on her resume about completing a master's degree, which had nothing to do with a job that she applied for. It was like crazy. Ugh, she put it on LinkedIn and she put it, it would have been one thing if she, for, you know, put it on LinkedIn, but she put it also on the actual application form for the job. And for that reason, she didn't get the job.
Cringing. Oh my God. That's a big thing to lie about.
It's huge. I'm not going to lie. I went to my LinkedIn page because I understand there's like this, I don't know, there's just this human instinct to just over it, like hype, like to be hyperbolic or like overinflate your credentials. I think we all do it when we're telling stories about ourselves. You know, everyone has that mom or that auntie who exaggerates. It's just this human instinct, but you have to check it when it comes to your professional credentials, especially on, you know, platforms like LinkedIn or in 100% on applications, because like one, why set people up for disappointment when they find out who you really are? And two, it's just so embarrassing, and it's going to blacklist you forever from that company if you let that happen.
It doesn't end well. Yikes.
No, ma'am.
Well, poor Paris. I was like, what? Notre Dame? What happened? It
I
seems
know. I
like,
don't think
I
they know,
know.
but I'm glad that at least to hear that it wasn't as bad, like the whole structure wasn't damaged.
Yes, but I was definitely like, the pictures of seeing people's faces, it was honestly, I mean, so many people were just like outside watching and they just looked just devastated, you know?
Yeah, I was trying to think of like the equivalent.
I was trying to think of a house of worship where I was like, or just like a structure in general that people would be devastated. Like, oh my goodness. And I don't know that we have anything equivalent to that.
I mean, it wasn't a terror attack, so you can't really equate it to the World Trade Center. But Empire State Building, Statue of Liberty, they're not
I feel
houses of
like,
worship, but they're
yeah.
iconic.
But I feel like if the Statue of Liberty caught fire, because you know what it is? Because it's not like, I feel like the Statue of Liberty, I don't know. I mean, it's not like housing these like, antiquities of like 1775, you know? I feel like with the Statue of Liberty, we'd be like, whoa, the Statue of Liberty, but they'll put it back up, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Jesus Christ wore the crown that's on her head. Like they saved this crown that apparently Jesus himself wore, which is
What?
insane. Yeah, I was like, I didn't know they still had his crown.
What?
I
That's
mean,
crazy. Yeah, that's what I mean. That I think what it was, it's like there's just so much history that's there that, but it's so crazy that, like all that gets so much press, but not too long ago there was a house of worship. I can't remember what Middle Eastern country, but it was the equivalent of that, in that country, and it didn't get the same amount of obviously like press, but I remember people were like devastated because it was like an extremely important house of worship that ISIS purposely destroyed,
Yeah.
and people were like standing outside like just beside themselves, and it's just a shame that, I mean, not to take away from what happened at Notre Dame, but I'm just saying that there are civilizations and there are people whose history is destroyed on a regular basis, and the world turns a blind eye,
Well, look at what happened in New Zealand. I mean, there's so many examples of houses of worship being a target of hate crimes and, truly devastating ones. So, at this point, it just sounds like it was like some kind of fire that was caused during a renovation process, which is even more ironic and
I
tragic.
know.
But I guess there's a bit of gratitude in that. Okay, thank God people, someone wasn't evil enough to attack Notre Dame. Like, anyway, just thoughts and prayers with the firemen who went into that blazing church and somehow managed to rescue it. Like, that was amazing. And
Yes.
I'm sure they will rebuild. It
Yeah.
will probably take a long time, but
There was already a billionaire who's pledged $100 million, which is awesome, to the renovation. So, yeah. So while I was gone, one of the things I put myself, because I was like, okay, so tax season is finally done. Thank you, Jesus. I mean, unless you filed your extension and then you've extended the misery. Sorry.
but
Oh,
not when your
but
debt is due.
exactly. Yeah. Tax season is all exactly. It's already done. But it made me really look at like, okay, what can I do better? And so I am firing my current financial planner. Sorry, Frank. He doesn't listen to podcasts, so whatever. What's the deal?
Frank. I've never even heard Frank's name before.
I know exactly because Frank doesn't do much. So he started off great, and then he just fizzled. And I'm like, Frank, hello, hello, hello. Is this thing on? And so that's like my pet peeve. It's like, you get my money and then you disappear. And so honestly, I didn't even know what I wanted. So I'll tell you what's been very helpful. I actually created this document where Jarrell and I sat down. Oh, Superman. Well, whatever. Y'all know his name probably. Superman and I sat down and kind of talked about like, well, one, I said, I think it'll be important for our current financial planner or our new financial planner to know where we stand, because they always ask the same questions, how much do you make? How about this? How much do you have in savings? What about retirement? So I put all of that down in this doc, and then I put like underneath it, like, so current situation, and then I have our goals, like, within the next 5 years, we'd like to be financially independent. We'd like to make $150,000 a year, like as a household, passively, you know, because we make that more now, but we work for that. So passively, our money yielding that. What we have to do, we'd like to maximize, because I set aside money for all my nieces and nephews and my godson, but I'd like to be more strategic with that. So we have a whole list of things, and not that a financial advisor, it might be a mix of people that will help, but I wanted to get out like what our goals were long term and short term. And it's been so helpful. I put in a Google Doc, and then I posted, and this is just, I'm sharing this with y'all BA listeners, because if you're looking for a financial advisor, I would suggest figuring out first creating a document of where do you stand and then what your goals are, long term, short term, or otherwise. And then what I did is I put in a Google Doc, and with Google Docs, you can share, create a link to share. So I posted on like, these financial Facebook groups I'm a part of and said, hey, looking for a financial planner. I wanted a fee only. So financial planners, you want to explain, Mandy, like the difference between like fee and like someone who gets paid based upon your portfolio?
Yeah, sure. A fee-only planner or fee-based planner, they'll just charge you like an hourly rate or a flat rate to take a look at your finances, and they may do it every time you have a conversation, or they may charge you a flat rate for an overall financial plan that costs you a certain amount, and then they charge you an hourly rate moving forward, but you always know upfront what their fees are going to be. Other financial advisors may tie their pay to the type of investments that they point you toward, where they're getting a kickback or a fee attached to the investments that they push you toward. Oh, dang. Didn't put my phone on silent. Rookie mistake. where they're getting a bit of the fee from the investment they point you toward, or they're taking a percentage. This is very common. A percentage of the returns they help you earn by giving you investment advice, which is pretty common.
Yes. So I am like, so in the beginning, like, typically if you don't, if you can't afford the fee, which is fine, cause I couldn't up until like recently, I just didn't want to pay the fee, or so, you know, people, I allowed financial, advisors to make their money up from a percentage of my portfolio, what they helped me to earn. But I've since moved away from that. And I really just want to pay a flat fee. And quite honestly, I'm sick and tired of handing my money over. Because I'm like, all these fees on fees on fees on fees. Like, I'd much rather say, hey, planner, you know, whatever, you're charging me $200, say, to sit down with me for this hour. Here's some questions that I have. I'm going to open up, say, like a Vanguard account or account, I don't know, whatever, you know, one of these accounts where you can manage your own money. Let's just say Vanguard. Like I said, I'm going to open up a Vanguard account. I'm thinking of a total stock market fund, which is, Vanguard has this account where the fund mirrors the S&P 500. So that is a very well-known U.S. market, the top 500 companies in the United States, right? And so, well, top meaning like earning. And so, you know, their fund will basically invest your money into like those companies. And so it's an index fund. So literally like an index is, you know, it's like a list of like, I'm not talking to you, obviously, Mandy, but those who are listening. And an index fund, an index is like, if you're looking at the index at the back of a book, a list of like, you know, maybe like, I don't know, words inside that book. So an index fund is a kind of like a list of all of these companies. And so I might ask my planner, you know, is this a good idea to put my money in an index fund to mirror the market? Because typically the stock market goes up over time, although there's ups and downs. There's ups and downs on its way up. What percentage of my money should I put there? Should I put my money also in a total market bond fund, which is a little bit safer? You don't make as much, but you also don't have the potential to lose as much. Just these kind of questions. And you might be like, what's a bond? What's a stock? Exactly. So I really just want someone who I can ask questions of, take my own money, and based upon, you know, the responses and the information that I get, make decisions with like my money, and not feel like I'm just handing my money over. Cause I feel like that's what I've been doing. And I'm not going to pretend like, you know, some of my financial planners have not made me money. I mean, it's not that Frank hasn't made me any money, but I honestly don't know what's going on. You know what I mean, Mandy? I'm like, so what are we doing? He doesn't answer when I text, or I'm like, aren't we supposed to have calls? Isn't that what I paid this flat fee for? And if I look, like I looked at my portfolio for 2018 and I made a decent return. I think maybe like 10 or 12%, something like that. So it's not like I'm losing money, but I don't
So did I, but I just have a damn target date fund and no financial advisor.
Exactly. And that's what I feel like, honestly. I feel like, great, you know, but can I just put exactly, I was thinking that, like, why can't I just put my money in the target date fund? Why do I have to pay you, Frank? And then I'll save money in fees, you know,
and because you, I think that what you're looking for is a financial planner who can bring value in other ways beyond like return. Because I think like if you look at actively managed funds, like basically investment firms that manage your money for you versus like just putting your money in an index fund, a lot of times the index fund wins out. So you have to find people who add value beyond the returns, and don't believe them if they say they can, oh, I can do double what the S&P did last year. Like, no, that's bullshit. And, you know, ask people what they can give you beyond just the regular return that anyone would expect, because you have to keep those realistic expectations and people who won't like oversell you.
And that's what I'm wanting. Like, I'm wanting like that, like, you know, like, yes, like, because beyond that, because that could literally be one conversation. Well, Tiffany, this is my favorite index fund because here's why: the fees are low and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, OK. And but I want more. Like, I want, like, I want to offer value to my employees. I wouldn't be able to give them a retirement account. I can't do that on my own. There are financial planners and advisors that can help me with that, you know? Yeah. So I'm just excited about interviewing. So I posted, and like I said, I created the doc and I sent everybody the same message. It was like 15 people that reached out to me. And I was like, hey, thank you so much for reaching out. You know, I've created a document to help give you a clear understanding of where my husband and I are and where we'd like to be, you know, please review. And in the doc, it was clear, like, you know, how I wanted to work with the person. Like, I would like to pay hourly. I want to manage my own money. So that way people can eliminate themselves. And of the 15, I would say there's probably 5 people that are viable. Some people eliminated themselves because they're like, oh, I don't do fee only, or you can only pay me yearly. And I'm like, nah, the yearly is, I want to pay you hourly, because if you suck, I've only paid for 1 hour, you know? So I'm excited though, because I feel like this is like the next frontier. I've got a dope accountant and CFO. And so I just want to kind of like a personal CFO of my life. So I'm excited. And I'll keep you guys abreast of, like, you know, how the interviews go and who I end up choosing. And even if I don't choose someone and they're dope, you know, I can obviously share some of the amazing people that I was able to connect with, because that's another desire of mine, is to kind of like create a list of dope financial experts, because people ask me all the time, like, well, who do you suggest for this? And I can be like, well, I interviewed her. She was great. Wasn't a fit for me because I needed more business assistance, but she might be a fit for you, you know?
Yes. I'll be waiting those recommendations like everybody else. Do the work for us. Like, you've seen those commercials for Home Advisor where it's like, do you know a good contractor? Cool. Could you vet them for me and get different rate schedules? Yeah.
And that's what I was like, you know, I'm excited though, because I'm like, yay. I just, you know, you're on the cusp of like, this could either be really good. I feel like it's like the MC Hammer thing. It's like, ooh, there was like this short period in his career where like money was booming and he mismanaged. And I'm like, ooh, I don't want to do the MC Hammer syndrome. I want that, you know, like I make right moves now. So 10 years from now, I can be like, woohoo, even if the budget niece is not popping, you know, I'm still good financially.
No, that is the goal, to build up build up an investment fund that is just generating income on income on income without you doing anything. That's something Marcus and I were talking about last week too. He has his own goals for how much he wants to have like invested. So he's making passive income. So next level, exciting.
Yeah.
All right, BA fam, y'all know when it comes to financial advice, you have to trust your source. That's why you listen to Brown Ambition, right? And when I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. I've been a longtime fan of NerdWallet. In fact, I almost worked there a couple of times, because when it comes to financial experts and writing, they really know how to give you the best reviews of financial products. I honestly wouldn't sign up for a credit card today if I hadn't looked at a review on a site like NerdWallet myself. And honestly, if y'all haven't learned about NerdWallet, you're missing out. And with their help, what could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms of each credit card issuer apply. Speaking of questions, though, should we take some?
Yes. I actually have a really good question where I'm like, yikes, it just came in my inbox. And I'm going to try to read it in a non-judgy voice.
Safe space, listeners.
Safe space, yeah, it is. And then, too, I'm also going to, I'm not going to obviously share this person's name. Okay, so good evening. I co-signed a student loan via Sallie Mae for a, in quotes, friend. My question is there a way that I can be released from the loan? I'm asking because my son starts college in the fall and I might need to get a loan for him. And I'm also planning on purchasing a home at the end of the year. Signed, what should I do?
Like, unless you are a parent co-signing, your daughter or son's student loan, the answer, I feel like 9.5 times out of 10 is going to be no. Because you're making yourself so vulnerable and so liable if that, the person on the other end of that loan, whether they're friend or family, no matter what their good intentions are, if they default on their loan, then that is your problem, 100%. She can't go back. She can't undo it. Yeah. So what steps can she take now to, reach her financial goals while also being tied to this student loan? Does she mention if it's federal or I'm assuming it, well, it could be federal, but probably more likely it's a private loan.
I was going to say it's probably more likely private because typically with federal, unless it's like higher education, you usually don't need a co-signer.
Yeah.
For your degree, unless it's like master's or something.
So let's say it's a private student loan. She's co-signed. There's a couple of ways. So you could ask your friend to refinance.
I was going to say, yeah.
This loan, which means she'd have to apply for a new loan. And use that loan to pay off her existing loan. And in the process, she'd be the only applicant for that loan. So that would take you off of it. Some lenders, like if she contacted the bank, she could ask what their process is for removing a co-signer. It may be that she has to prove financial worthiness, income, assets, credit score, and basically another form of refinancing the debt to get you off of it. But if she needed you to co-sign in the first place, or she or he, it may be that they're not financially, stable enough to qualify for a different loan. But that's the only avenue I can think of.
Well, I'm going to make the assumption that you did this a while ago, only because I'm assuming that if your son's schooling was coming up fairly soon, you likely wouldn't have co-signed so quickly to his college opportunity coming up. You can also consider consolidating your loan with other loans that you may have. That's kind of a way. So typically to do refinancing or even consolidating with another loan is because consolidating is not a good idea if you have a federal loan, because then you lose like kind of federal loan protections. But we're assuming this is private because it needed a co-signer. But the borrower is going to need decent credit history, stable employment, and really enough income to prove enough income, like Mandy said, to cover the monthly payments. Because the purpose of having a co-signer from someone who's lending is, I don't know that you can afford it, but between you and your friend, you can afford it. And so if your friend is gone, I don't know if you can afford it. So basically your friend would have to kind of prove, hey, I can afford it now, and I don't necessarily need this co-signer. So refinancing or consolidating with another loan, those are kind of your only two options. But if you're listening and someone is kind of asking you to co-sign, honestly, it's just not, because just like, what should I do? What should I do is also wanting to purchase a home. And so this is debt for this person. And so when you're purchasing a home, they're going to see like, one, how much are you making? But then two, how much do you owe? And your debt to income ratio, DTI number, that, that's important to lenders, because they're like, well, if you already owe $50,000 here, you want us to lend you $300,000. We only feel comfortable lending you $250,000 because you already owe somebody else $50,000. So it's just keeping all of that in mind before co-signing. It's rarely ever a good idea.
1,000%. And if she's, she said she's looking to take out a, or co-sign a loan for her kid, right? A student loan. You know, check with your student. And again, like this, another good opportunity to remind folks, like if they need a co-signer, I mean, double check if they've maxed out their federal student aid. And even, you know, if you're, I don't know, I feel like at this point in time, with the way the cost of college is, if you're having to take out a private loan to fund your education on top of the federal loans, is all that debt worth the degree? And like taking a look at the cost of that college, and are there any scholarships he or she could apply for, any grants, any aid? Are there any other avenues of financing that tuition for this year, you know, without you needing to co-sign? If she's not, she's looking to do it this fall, so I'm assuming they're like a high school senior and they're going to school for the first time. There's still time to look for a more affordable school. You know, think about what you're setting your kid up for post graduation in 4 more years, how much debt they will have.
Yeah. So what should I do? I hope you have your answer. Do you want to take another question?
Yeah, we've got another question. Let me see. So this actually came from one of my family members. I went and visited some family over the weekend. And of course, after I destroyed them, and I mean destroyed them in Yahtzee several times, one of my family members asked me, you know, because they're about to get a windfall from their employer. And they wanted to know, because they just took out a mortgage a couple of years ago, and they wanted to know, should I take this windfall and apply it to my mortgage debt? Because, you know, I've always been debt-free. The mortgage is the only debt I have right now. Car's paid off. You know, this is someone in their late 20s. Car's paid off. No car note, no student debt, just a mortgage. Should I take the windfall and pay it off? And it's a significant sum. So no, it's not from our reader inbox, but that was the question.
Good question.
Go ahead. Since I already gave the answer, it's too late, really. But I figured for that person, but for you guys, if you're wondering, now that I have a mortgage, I feel like, you know, the first thing I asked him was, what's your interest rate on your mortgage? And it's
yes,
like,
I was going to say that.
Yeah, it's something like 4.0% because he got it. Yeah, over a couple of years ago when rates were really low, you know, and I said, take a look at your 401k. He never logged into his retirement plan at work. Log in and tell me what your annualized rate of return was for the last year, like year to date. How much have you earned on your investment? It was something like 13%, 12 or 13%.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Which, it, you know, this was a really, it was kind of an up and down year. It was like a big crash last year in the beginning of the year, but then the market rebounded. But I was like, take a look at the percent you're earning on your little 401k investment, which was, I think he had some kind of target date fund. And then take a look at what you're paying on your mortgage rate. And for that reason, I think one of the first things you should consider is putting more toward your retirement fund. With a mid-year kind of windfall like that, it's not like you can earmark it to max out your 401k. But I said, what you could do is open up a Roth individual retirement account, so Roth IRA, max that out, which I think is $6,500 for the year, something like that.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And this is also someone who doesn't have a huge emergency fund. And I said, get comfortable with your emergency fund. So max out what you think you need for 6 months or whatnot. And then think about opening a brokerage account with the leftovers. And you can invest in the same types of funds that your 401k is invested in. You can just do that on your own with a taxed brokerage account through E-Trade or Vanguard or whatever. There's a million options. But, you know, rushing to pay off the mortgage, even though it's debt, and this is something that I thought about too, even though it's debt, you have to think about, okay, well, what's the value of the home? What's your equity?
Yes.
It's not like it's debt that's like a credit card debt that has no value for you.
Yeah. I mean, that was honestly you couldn't have given a more perfect answer. I was thinking that because I get it. No, but I get it. Cause you know, you and I are both like debt averse. So, you know, I get it when you're like, I don't want this debt, but if the debt's costing you, like I had to make that decision with my student loans when I was aggressively paying them off. And then I had to stop because at some point I really was looking at, I said, Tiffany, your student loan interest rate, this is before, you know, the foolishness that y'all are paying now. My student loan interest rate was like 3%. I was like, Tiffany, you are losing 3%, you know, to student loans, right? But at looking at your retirement account, you're gaining 10, 12%. So you can pay off the student loans so you can stop losing three, but then you miss out on the opportunity to gain 10. And what I ended up doing anyway is I just started paying student loans the minimum, and I put the money toward my business instead, because I realized that my return on investment for the Budgetista was even better than my retirement account. And I grew my low six figure a year business to a multiple seven figure a year business. So, and then last year I had more than enough to say, hey, I have a lump sum. My student loan debt was like $53,000. I have a lump sum to pay the student loan debt, but that was like 7 years in the making, you know? So it made more sense to use that money to make money than to use that money to pay off debt, because debt free is not wealth. Wealth can make you debt free though.
100,000%.
I know it's a little bit of a short episode. You know, we're going to dip our baby toe in. Do we have Brown Break, Brown Boost?
Always. I've missed this little segment. It wasn't the same without you, Brown Boosting and Brown Breaking.
Well, I was going to say ladies first. Meanwhile, I'm a lady. But go ahead. Youth before beauty, youth before age. I don't know. Just go ahead. You can Brown Break or Brown Boost first.
100%. This is what I've been complaining about for a while now. If you're out there hiring right now, I just want to, you know, raise a glass of wine to you and say clink, because it is so hard finding good job candidates, and people continue, because right now the job market is so good. I mean, everyone's got jobs. So if you're looking for help, like you're looking for people, whether it's freelance or full-time, it's a struggle because you're in the position of needing to poach people. And often when you're poaching people, it's sort of like when they say it's a seller's market or a buyer's market. When it comes to housing, right now I feel like it's a buyer's market. So it's an employee's market where you have people like me who are looking to find really talented people, but you already have jobs. So it's driving up the cost of labor. So you're needing to pay people a lot more than usual because you need to like lure them away from jobs that they may be happy at, you know, they may be like fine with. And you know, a lot of people have gotten jobs in the last couple of years. So it's not like they've been there very long. So it's just a struggle. And one of the things that, you know, it's just part of, you know, what it is hiring. And in spite of it, I've still managed to put together a really strong team. But, you know, as any manager, like recruitment never ends. I feel like I'm always trying to fill one role for whatever reason. But one thing, like a piece of advice I would give from my experience hiring the past few years is, like, if you are in a job, if you're in the job interview process and you're toward the end, so either you're about to get an offer or you've gotten an offer or you're in the final interview round, at that point, if you decide to withdraw from the you know, you decide to turn down the offer or withdraw yourself from the interview process, send a note to the hiring manager personally. And I say this because I've had candidates who I've invested a lot of time myself in and pushed for, and they've turned around and withdrawn or turned down an offer, but just sent an email to the random recruiter who they emailed, like maybe in the beginning of the process, maybe even not if I was the first person to reach out to them. And as much as I know I'm not supposed to be offended, it really like kind of pisses me off and makes me feel disrespected that they wouldn't take the time to send a personal note, you know, thanking me for the time or whatever. And also, I'm still hiring, right? So if in the future this person, you know, wanted to be employed or wanted to follow back up about another position, like, don't you want to leave the interview process in the best possible, with the best possible, you know, tone and like leaving the right taste on someone's mouth afterward, you know? So that's my advice. I do the same thing in return. I make sure, you know, I was on vacation on Friday and I called two candidates to tell them personally that we were not moving forward with their applications or, you know, for the jobs, because I wanted to give them the treatment that I prize and respect from candidates in return. So that's just my break and my advice. If you are like, it's smart, you know, if you have a job right now and if people are reaching out to you, like I get emails personally from recruiters all the time. So-and-so is hiring this, you know, are you interested? If you take those calls, if you entertain those offers, just because you're trying to see what else is out there and see how much money someone might be willing to pay you, but you have no intention of taking the job, think about what might happen if you let it go very far and then bow out of that, you know, at the very end when someone's invested time in you. Think about that, your reputation and your reputation professionally. And also, I'm not saying it's not smart to do that. I'm not an idiot. Like, the only way I was able to catch up and actually earn a market salary, because I was hired at the bottom of the recession when the rates were so low for people doing what I was doing. The only way I could catch up with my peers was to job hop. I understand it. It's smart, but you have to do it in a respectful way. Yes. So you're not burning those bridges.
Because it all comes rant back over.
To. Yes, 100%. Yes. And especially in a small world like personal finance journalism, get out
what?
Of here. What?
My sister said that. She was in a scientist in pharmaceuticals, and she was like, I can't. She literally went from Jersey to Chicago to here. And she's like, I'm seeing the same people like around the country. And she was like, whoa, if I pissed these people off, this would have been like really bad, you know? Mm-hmm. And so mine is really just a quick little boost. My boost is just, for the first time, I tried Rent the Runway.
For the first time, hello, 2014.
I know. I mean, you know, I'm not an early adapter. Let's just be real. I'm fairly frugal, and, you know, I'm just doing more and more speaking engagements, and I'm like, ugh. I'm either having to like run to get like a new dress, which I don't spend a whole lot of money on dresses. I would say I average probably like 40, 50 bucks, but still, you think about like, I might have 3 engagements in a week, and I'm like, well, unless I'm re-wearing the same thing over and over. And after a while, you know, I have maybe like 10, 15 staple dresses, which sounds like a lot until you say you've done 15 things, whether it's TV or whatever, in a month. And then you're like, well, what do I wear next month? So I decided to try it. I have to say that my first crop was already awesome. I picked 4 dresses. I'm doing like the unlimited, and 3 of them were a hit. I was like, wow, 3 of them fit well. One was, I didn't realize it was a split. I needed to read the directions, like the description a little more. I was like, ooh, this is too sezzy for the stage, but it was still cute. So I have to say, I'm really pleased. And yeah, I like it. I love the packaging that it comes in. It's super easy to use. And yeah, I really want to buy less clothes. I just want to be able to wear it, be cute, and then send it back. So Rent the Runway. I know I'm late, but whatever. I'm just giving a boost because, you know, I had not tried it yet.
I don't know. It's been a minute since I've used it. I actually forgot about it. I'm like thinking, dang, I used to use it all the time. I should get back on it. You're right. It's annoying to have to buy new stuff.
Yeah.
Just teasing you. It's fine.
Yeah, I know. It's okay. But I'm like, you know, I know I'm a little late. I was like, what? Even like the place at my office, there's like a young receptionist. She can't be more than like 18, 19. And I was like, oh my God, I'm getting my first Rent the Runway. She looked at me like, girl, are you like, where have you been? Living in the cage? And I was like, what? The front desk girl uses Rent the Runway? She's like, girl, all the time. And I was like, oh, well, whatever. So yeah, that's my boost. So I know it's time to say goodbye to all our family. BROWN ambition.
I'm so glad to have you back, Tiff.
It's great. It's great to be back, honestly.
Good. Hope you feel lovely and rested. Your little staycation is goals for me. I'm hoping to do something this summer, finally. Take a little break.
Good, good. Just let me know. Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. That's the show. I forgot to mention it, but if you have questions, hit us up, brownambitionpodcast@gmail.com, or you can go to our website, brownambitionpodcast.com.
All right, y'all. See you on the interwebs.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.